Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson.
There he is.
I've been recreating. That's what you do when you take recreation.
Is that what you've been recreating?
Okay. I love it. Actually, recreating, I guess. Yeah. It was good. I mean, we hadn't, I was trying to think, but I don't know when in my life, and I'm talking about my entire life.
Wow. That I've nearly 77 years.
Yeah, I've not been in a car ride of more than an hour. And I haven't done it for 5.5 months. So this was our first car trip.
Mm-hmm.
I go into the city, but that's about 25 minutes. At most, it's 25 minutes.
Yeah.
This was like, 3 hours one way, 3 hours the other way. And it was odd. It was really odd. I felt that I was getting used to something new here. I've been home based.
Me too. I realized that at the end of March there, or for March, that was, I realized since the shutdown, I have not been more than 90 minutes by car away from my Four Seasons Valhalla outpost on the mainland.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In Cloudlandia, I've been all over the globe many times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, and I haven't been around all around the world as much as over the last year. I've been...
Right.
Where I'm connecting with people, from all over the world. I've never had a year like this. It's interesting, and I'm trying to in Strategic Coach, in the 10 times program and in the Free Zone program, I'm endeavoring, there's a word don't use too often, I'm endeavoring endeavoring to have people appreciate the significance of the last 12 months, that they don't decide by it and kind of say, we'll get this behind us. And I said, if you treat this properly, it can be the most unusual year in your life in terms of your entrepreneurial future.
Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Because now I've read the latest things that there's only 7% of the U.S. population is not on the internet now. 93% adoption. 93% have migrated to Cloudlandia.
Yeah. Do you know what it was before COVID?
I do not. I wish I did.
It'd be interesting to see what, because it's probably the biggest one-year jump since the very first years when you got all the early adapters.
You really have to be shunning society to choose not to make the migration.
Yeah. One of two things, it's deliberate, like you're a hermit. You're like you're a committed hermit.
Yes.
Or you're really clueless.
Well, and overwhelmingly, those are the two things. So overwhelmingly, the characteristics or makeup of the 7% are overwhelmingly 65 and over, overwhelmingly high school or less education, and overwhelmingly the lowest income earners. So there it is. That's
and probably probably rural too.
Yeah. Well, I wonder what the global migration is.
Well, it seems to me that cell phone use would be the first indicator. I mean, if you were
Cell phone, you're in.
Yeah.
If you got a smartphone, you're in. I mean, that's
yeah,
really...
but what I'm saying is perhaps the first purchase that someone around the world would make that would introduce them to the internet is probably their own cell phone.
Yes, that's true.
As opposed to their own computer.
Yeah. Well, their own cell phone. Have you heard that this smartphone that you have is more powerful than all the computing power that Bill Clinton had when he took office?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're holding that in our hands. We've got more capabilities than he had to run the free world, you know?
I'm not sure that was one of his big future goals.
Oh man.
I think he had big goals, but I'm not sure the making use of the internet was one of them.
So have you gotten, I mean, you know, you think about the, I saw the headlines are roughly about American Airlines is declaring everything kind of back now, and they're opening up, they're putting all the planes into service and opening up the old routes. And because I think we're at close to 90 million vaccinated right now, or so. Are you among the 90 million yet?
Well, I'm among the far less than 90 million in Canada. So I'm last Wednesday, I got my first Pfizer shot.
Okay.
And Babs got hers yesterday.
Okay.
But they have like a 4-month in between first and second shot in Canada.
4 months?
They've really been asleep at the wheel. I think in this crossover from mainland to Cloudlandia, the higher you go in leadership in any institution, the higher the level of incompetence.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We just got in Florida. Now we're 50, or actually now they're down now to 40, 40 and above. You can get the vaccine. So
yeah, well, Florida's right ahead. I mean, it's certainly one of the best led states during this period of time.
Yeah, you know, that's what's an interesting thing is to see the media, you know, that's the sentiment is different than the reporting, because the reporting would lead that it's one of the most recklessly led states, right? The wild frontier.
The definition of reckless, people who don't pay any attention to what we're saying.
Right. That's right. That's right. They're reckless. Yes.
Anyone who doesn't pay attention to what I say is by definition, a reckless person.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Now it's one of those deep thoughts. So what is wreck? Because if you're reckless, I've never heard anybody talk about exercising wreck.
Yeah, because it's not W-R-E-C-K. It's
no.
R-E-C-K.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
That's one of those.
I wonder what having wreck means.
That's what I mean. I've never heard of anybody say, now that guy's got wreck. Yeah. Yeah, he's exercising great wreck.
Yeah, he's wreckful.
He's wreckful. Oh, Dan. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Well, are you going to...
There's a person you could admire for his wreckfulness.
His wreckfulness. Oh, my goodness.
It could even be a title. Welcome, your wreckful. You know, like highness or holiness. You know, you could... Wreckfulness. His wreckfulness will be arriving in a half hour.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think rectal people are ones who tattle on their neighbors.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you know, I've been test driving the VCR formula. Yes, I've been test driving with different, in different conversations. And it is, I'll tell you, it's amazing. It's kind of like, what I'm noticing about myself is it's almost like learning to fly without gravity kind of thing. Like you were saying, there's no gravity in, Cloudlandia, that when I realized that I had a really interesting day on Thursday, I went and drove down to Arcadia, Florida, which is about an hour and 10 minutes from me south. So I was almost like the farthest that I've been, and it had
Is this on the coast?
No. Arcadia is right down the middle. It's south of me, in the middle of nowhere, basically. I have a client.
It's kind of ranch country down there, isn't it?
So that's exactly what it is.
They have the big ranches.
That's exactly what it is.
That there are huge ranches in the middle of Florida, like some of the biggest in the United States.
Yeah, the middle of Florida is like and it's beautiful. Like at sunset and sunrise and things, it's like the Serengeti is what it looks like. Like that sort of, as far as you can see, lots of nothing, you know, and it's beautiful. Lots of ranches. Yeah. And, but anyway, I have a client who lives in Fort Myers, which is about 2.5 hours away from me. And we decided to split the difference and meet in Arcadia at a local little diner, which was lovely. But we, you know, was sharing the VCR formula, laying out like, because we're looking at a collaboration as to how we can, you know, collaborate on in our unique abilities and with some other people. He's got an interesting part of the puzzle, and I was laying out it's creating new economic models of things, of how to, this is why I'm kind of excited about the potential of the blockchain to have smart contracts like this. But that's think about allocations, like sitting, having things where if we take the whole revenue, the whole dollar that's going to be generated through our collaboration of the, what parts of this are, how do you break down contribution or attribution or the, you know, share of revenue on something like that. And I wanted to get your take on it because I know you're sort of thinking in a peer collaboration is that it's not about splitting money or takes, but I would love to get your take on that. I'll share with you how I looked at it. We'll use a contrast then.
I'll use my free zone, some of my free zone criteria, what constitutes a free zone collaboration. And this, I think we're talking about the same thing here. And I always say that there has to be an agreement on the end of the collaboration. In other words, you're projecting a collaboration into the future. And, a couple of things strike me that it's either interesting or it's not interesting. Is something new being created through the collaboration? In other words, that you have something to contribute and the other person has something to contribute. But you're not simply trading what you have for what that person has. You're putting together what you have with what the other person has to create a first thing. So, and it has to be a value creation proposition. In other words, it's your first thought about it is that this creates some kind of new value in the marketplace. And then there has to be agreement that you want to be this new value to be for the benefit of the same kind of person that you want to be a hero to, that you want to be a hero to someone in the marketplace. They want to be here, and it's the same person, and you're creating a new value creation. And if those things are in agreement, then you work backwards. So you have, okay, value creation, right, new value creation. Number two, benefits a particular type of customer, you know, recipient in the marketplace. And then you work backwards. And the interesting thing is if you have agreement on both of those, you can even do kind of a, as far as the deal goes, you can be conditional. Let's, you know, you could make it, well, let's, in the first 6 months, let's put it together and let's create the new value form and let's benefit 10 people, you know, 10 people. Okay, so you make it conditional. And then let's just see how the money it gets generated, because you you really don't know at the start what the actual cash flow looks like as you put the two things together. You actually don't know.
Right.
You know, and so my sense is, and both of you are okay with that because you're excited that you have agreement on those 2 points, on those 2 points, you know. And then I think that who, not how applies in both way, in both instances, that you're not doing a how that you don't like doing, and they're not doing a how that they don't like doing.
Right. You're absolutely right. That's exactly, I mean, that lays it down. However, there's two, you know, essentially, I will have no interaction with the client, with the beneficiary of the the new collaboration. It's for him, for his a new. So basically, what I've got a scale ready algorithm that delivers new clients to his business.
Yep.
Right. Like as the before unit. And so I don't want to be in that business. I don't want to be anything to do with those. I want to be invisible in that business, basically. Mm-hmm. But he can really benefit from this.
Yep.
And so we were breaking down the, because I've done a lot of thinking about it in other arrangements that I've had, of tying the tying to almost a putting value on the intellectual property.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting thing. I thought, Dan, this is an interesting thing. I want to, as a sidebar, talk about the difference between intellectual capital and intellectual property. Have you thought that through? Or,
well, first of all, IP is a legal term, and you know, that's it's embedded in law.
Yeah.
Okay. Intellectual capital is more in, I would say it's more in the area of if I'm looking at the VCR, intellectual capital is more in the area of readily usable capability.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I agree.
In other words, that it's job ready. In other words, anytime you want to utilize this, there's nothing to develop as far as the capability of it. Yeah, so
that's what I've found.
But I would say that your intellectual capital is protected and enhanced by the degree that you embedded in intellectual property law.
I think that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And first of all, it gives assurance to the other person that you're actually the originator, so he's not going to, you know, that there's not going to be any blowback to the other person if they use your capability because you are the originator and you own it. And the other thing is that it's for the other person's use, but it's not for the other person's ownership.
Right. That's true. And that's the interesting thing is that I thought that when I was thinking about it, that I have a lot of intellectual capital that because we talked about when I was looking through doing my VCR assets, I was looking, you know, on page after page after page of all the algorithms that I have that are ready to be deployed kind of thing, you know? But fewer of them as true intellectual property out, you know, earning on its own kind of thing. So I think that's the thing is turning the intellectual capital into intellectual property is a good
endeavor. My sense is that there may be an immediate shortcut to this, because my contention is if the non-fungible asset or non-fungible
tokens
token.
NFT,
token doesn't do any. Token doesn't do anything for me, but non-fungible asset really does. Because that's really what it is. It's an asset,
right?
And it's proven. It's you can prove that it's unique. You know, using a lot of actually the thinking that goes into intellectual property law. You know, when it became official, when it was created, when it was deployed, is a very, very crucial, crucial part of doing it. But then I'm just scouting around for this quarter to see what the process is for doing this. In other words, which blockchain and which, because there's a lot of blockchains around. A lot of people don't know this. And for the knowledge of the, you know, our listeners here, that a blockchain is an entirely new digital process by which unique originality of anything can be logged into a record. And the record is called the blockchain. The blockchain is. And that is, it's put into a vast stream of connected records. And once it's logged in there, you can't change anything in your record unless you changed all the other records, which is possible, but it's, why don't you just go rob a bank?
right.
Robbing a bank would probably be easier than stealing the originality out of the blockchain. And when I say there's a lot of blockchains around, they're being used in various industries. For example, the diamond industry. You can now, when you walk into a reputable jeweler, say, I want to see the provenance of this particular diamond. And if he's up to date with the jewelry industry, he or she should be able to say, here's the complete blockchain record of this, of where it was mined, when it was mined, under what circumstances it was mined, how it was processed, and how it was, and who has owned it along the line that is sitting right here in this shop. And you can do this with wines. You can do this with artwork, and more, I think it's starting to move towards all the other areas that we call intellectual property.
Okay, because that's really what intellectual property is. I mean, you have a copyright, you have a, you know, you have a trademark, you have a patent, you have a particular design that's called trade design, and you have what are called trade secrets. Trade secrets that you don't make public, but which you can actually verify, legally. You can actually, you know, embed these that they have legal standing. So anyway,
like the Colonel's 11 herbs and spices, right?
Well, the Coke formula is obviously a trade secret, you know.
Yes.
So anyway, you know, there's all sorts of formulas probably that nobody wants to make public, but it's important for them to have them verified as original in case some sort of theft, attempted theft happens, and they can bring to bear, you know, that they have the starting point for this. Yeah, so this is actually, it's very, very interesting. The Supreme Court case that's most being looked forward to in the United States right now, and this will be June, the ruling will come out, is the original 20,000 lines of programming code that Oracle claims were stolen from them by Google, the original Google. And this is the beginning of the search engine, the Google search engine. So everything in the world that we know Google for is that it could be at contention here in this court case, you know, it would be interesting. One, if the court rules in Oracle's favor, and two, what kind of damages are
I was
declared.
Just going to say, how would they even calculate that?
Well, you can calculate anything. Mm-hmm. How much money has Google made since they purportedly, it's because it's contentious, that they purportedly stole and by Oracle's point of view, misused the original 20,000 lines of 20,000 lines of programming copy. So I mean, it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Wasn't there some sort of controversy about the same thing with Bill Gates years ago with the
graphic user interface?
Yeah, something like that. What was that all about, too?
Yeah, well, first of all, the graphic user interface was a huge breakthrough for computers because it meant that you could have hundreds of millions of computer, skilled computer users who didn't need to know any code. They didn't know need to know any code. That was the great claim in, the 1970s, I remember, said that you better get to school and learn how to code, because if you don't learn how to code, you won't be able to use one of these computers. You know, every person that you can remember who couldn't get a date, a male who couldn't get a date, was heading in that direction because they wanted to accumulate a sense of superiority over all the other males who kicked dirt in their face and females that rejected them. And as it happened, there was a research laboratory financed by Xerox called PARC, P-A-R-C, as Palo Alto Research Center in Palo Alto, California, right in the center of. And they had said, you know, remembering all these codes or learning all these codes is just a huge obstacle. Why don't we create something where all you have to do is click, you know, all you have to do is, you know, you just have to click on your spacebar or click on your, on your forward or your delete and you'll do it. And, but this was developed by PARC. And so the story goes that someone an intermediary between Steve Jobs and the head person at Park introduced Steve Jobs, and they wanted to show him this innovation. And this was in the very early days. I mean, you're talking, you know, you're talking about the late 70s, early 80s. So this is, you know, when Apple was two Steves, you know, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. And so they were, they were still more or less operating out of the original garage or a bigger garage, you know, and he wanted to get ahead of the game. And so he went over, and so this is sort of one of those apocryphal stories, you know, apocryphal in the sense that it's true enough that it makes the point. And that he showed him the graphic user interface, and he just sat there and he shook his head and he says, "No, I can't see this going anywhere. No, I just don't." Yeah. Well, I hope you're having fun working on this project, because I just can't see it. Just can't see it going anywhere. And then trying to get out of that building as fast as he could back to his own building. And actually doing what he had just seen. And then the original, I think it was the Mac 2. I think the Mac 2 came out with us, the original Mac.
Because found the mouse. That was the big thing. Mm-hmm. Was they
stolen from somewhere else? Stolen from somewhere else.
Right. Oh, so much stealing going on there, Dan.
Yeah. And then, of course, Gates, not being really Gates was a programmer, so he immediately understood the value of it, and he had just worked out the deal with IBM, where IBM was only interested in hardware, and he said, "Well, we'll take the software." MS-DOS, you know, Microsoft DOS was the thing, and he got ownership of that. And he says, "Now I've got the key to the world," but he still had a problem. It was still based on coding, the early Macs came out, and he looked at them and he said, "Well, they're not going anywhere." He said, "They'll just steal what they're doing." You know, and that ended up in the Supreme Court. And neither Jobs or Gates got any satisfaction out of it, because what came up is that it was actually a Xerox. You know, if anybody owned it, it was Xerox. And Xerox didn't make their money on court cases. They didn't make their money on technology. They made their money on ink.
Right.
They spawned an incredible amount of technology. I think Park Laboratories and Bell Labs probably sparked the most creativity that went into the internet, the beginning of the internet. I mean, Bell was probably the greatest research. Bell Labs, greatest technological research in the history of humanity.
Yeah. There was a documentary about them, I think, called...
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it wasn't, but I think it was called Something Magic. Practical Magic, maybe, or something. But it was talking about some of the things that they invented, but were way ahead of their time and didn't find the commercial application.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a very, very big issue here about their not allowing these way ahead of their time innovations to get out in the marketplace, because the point of their labs, not the whole point, because I don't think anything has just one point to it or one purpose to it. But one of the things of their lab was to scent out, you know, smell out possible future competition that could undermine what the big thing was. They had this nationwide nationwide telephone system, and they controlled all the delivery, they controlled all the installation, they controlled all the equipment, they controlled all the servicing. And part of their worry was that something would come along and it would disrupt them, you know, it would disrupt them, just like the telephone disrupted the telegraph. And and one of the big points about antitrust law is that it's going to get expanded, I think, probably certainly in the next 20 years, which in, you know, the legal world isn't a long period of time, that it's been, antitrust law has been narrowed down to just that, you know, that somebody is in a trust situation, they have a trust monopoly. If now they control the entire industry, and they're raising consumer prices, so it's all come down to one issue: are consumers having to pay more for this because somebody has a monopoly?
I gotcha.
Yeah, but the
or
real
are
issue,
they benefiting and getting less because of that? Like you would argue, you know, Amazon. I think they could, you know, you could get into that situation that Amazon is on its way to creating a
industry monopoly. Yeah, yeah, they have a complete sector monopoly, and you know, and
but what's and, their sector? It's physical goods. I mean, when you look at the,
but it's retailing.
It's
retailing. Yeah. Here's where they cross over the line, though. They carefully observe everything that's being retailed on Amazon, and if they see something they like, they create their own. They create their own product. They reverse engineer what someone else is doing, and then they go in competition with them. And I think that should be forbidden, that you can be the platform or you can be the producer, but you can't be both.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. It's like Facebook. You can be a platform or you can be a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Publishers can censor. Platforms censor. It would be like the electric company.
Right, that's what I felt about
that you have in winter. That you have in Winter Haven. You know that you're in Winter Haven, and the electric company, the company that provides the power to your house, starts looking at some of your online comments. They could be listening to "Welcome to Cloudlandia," and they say, "We don't like their mindset. We don't like their politics, so we're going to cut Mr. Jackson off. Mr. Jackson, you know, his neighbors can get it, but Mr. Jackson, we don't like how he's thinking about things." Well, that's being a publisher. That's treating the electric grid like you're a publisher. And you know, it'd be like an airline saying, this is strictly for one political affiliation or another. I'm sorry, we don't allow, if you vote this way, you can't fly in our airline. Well, no, you can't do that if you have a platform.
Did you see that, you know, speaking of third party things like that, is Lil Nas X, Nike just got an injunction against the third party that designed the Lil Nas X Satan shoe. This whole thing came out of left field, but the company Mischief that did the design is a sort of separate from Nike. They just use those Nike shoes, in mischievous ways. And that's a really But talk about getting reach. I mean,
well, first of all, I think that they've if they had done this 5 years ago, it might not have made the stink, it's making. But right now, things are hypersensitive politically.
And
Nike's got enough. Nike's got enough on his plate right now.
Yeah.
What it's favoring and what it's, what it's sort of, they've become very political in the last, starting with Kaepernick. I think the Kaepernick thing really started it. And they can say, it's 666 shoes. I'm sorry, what were the numbers that you used? Six?
Right, exactly.
Well, the whole point is, he's 19, 20 years old. So what do you know about, what's going on in the world, So my sense is the timing was bad, because, in life, you either learn the lesson or you'll be the lesson.
Right. Yeah, that's just such a, it seems like a, it's weird to see how in the spotlight he was a year ago, literally. And you could see that sort of fading a little bit in that it wasn't the forefront, his new material wasn't being as, it's hard to beat coming out of the gate with the number one song in history.
Yeah.
And then this, I did a little, do you ever go to Google Trends just as a fun tool? And you can do a relative search index, see what people are searching, or what the popularity of something. And what I went to look at was I just put Lil Nas X in to see, and it shows you over the last 2 years the trend. Like, you could see the spikes of Lil Nas X all through last year, but this is on the relative strength of the relative index is huge spike in searching search terms of, now who is this Lil Nas X? That now, where it was the kids searching for Lil Nas X when the song was popular, now it's the parents and cancel culture searching, who's this Lil Nas X now? Feels like. But the popularity, that's what, that's why I thought about that with Nike when they signed Colin Kaepernick. All the publicity that came from that, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, I think in both cases, both Colin Kaepernick and Lil Nas X, they're kind of innocents caught in a big war. They got they're in no man's territory between two sides that are really starting to polarize. And they're really starting to polarize. And you know what it's like? It's kind of like all those actors and screenplay writers in the late 1940s who thought it was kind of
the blacklist.
Cool to belong to the local Communist Party and have conversations about that. And then they just got caught. And they could do it with impunity in during the Second World War, because Uncle Joe was like our ally, Then they got caught right in the middle of the no man's land. You never want to be, there's Cloudlandia, and there's the mainland, but there's an in-between that you don't want to get caught in between.
Right, right. You don't want to get caught in between, right.
Yeah, yeah. You're with gravity, but in the wrong place.
Yeah, that's funny. I didn't think about that, the ally in the 40s. Like, I wondered what, because I always thought about that as the 50s was the blacklisting and the
it started the Hollywood in the late stuff, so. Yeah, it started late 40s, and then
okay.
the McCarthy was he was in, came up, and he had this committee, you know, which was the non-American, you know, non-American committee,
the House
like that,
Un-American Activities Committee.
That was,
right.
Well, that was the House. He was a senator, so they had the same thing in the Senate, and and it was just when television was getting big.
Yeah,
you know, so he caught television. There was the Cold War, who are all these Hollywood people anyway? These Hollywood, Hollywood writers and. And they were mostly naive. They were incredibly naive, you know, that it gave them, you know, they all grouped together and they all, you know, there were camps, actually, communist camps where they sent their children, you know, around Los Angeles and everything. And I said, you know, I remember, who was it? It was Reagan. I think it was Reagan. And Reagan was invited to one of these, gatherings. It would be like a social gathering at someone's house, but then it would get around to the serious talk. And he walked out. He walked out and he said, "This is dangerous for me and this is dangerous for the country." And Reagan went from a arch Democrat. He was the head of the Actors Union, and he said,
"Yeah,
we've got to root this out, you know, and everything like that." So that's how Reagan started. Reagan was he was a lifetime Democrat. He was a lifetime,
right.
You know, he represented the actors, and he was the head of the union, and he said, "We gotta keep our union free." So he started the whole process of getting these people out of the Actors Union.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, really interesting. And this is why, you know, people say politics isn't important. And I said, that's like saying the weather's not important.
Yeah, right. It just is. The weather's not important, right?
Yeah, wow. It doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect me at all. And I said, I'll keep it in mind.
I'll keep that in mind. That's funny. Yeah,
that's like being, that's like being, where do the hurricanes usually come ashore in Florida, west side or east side?
They can come either side. They come, we get surrounded. They can come from the Gulf, the more dangerous ones, I think, come from on the ocean side.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm.
They generally come through the Bahamas first or something like that, right?
Yeah. If they're coming up from there and they get a run at Florida, that's where it's going to be the dangerous one. Usually, if they have to kind of do some maneuvering to make a if they're coming up between Cuba and Florida to get into the Gulf, it's unusual that they make that kind of right turn into the thing. That's why when they come, the ones that have the biggest impact are when they get a running start straight north into the Gulf, into Louisiana and into, or New Orleans and Texas.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, like that, but they're living there, not having shutters, not having.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure that there's a checklist that you as a, you know, a Winter Haven resident have to.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of make sure this isn't true and know a good repair guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, in 2006, when all the, with you know, the big, two hurricanes came through in one year. That was the joke, was that the Florida changed the state flag to the blue tarp, the blue tarp material, because all the roofs were covered in blue tarps for waiting for roofers to come and fix it.
Yeah. That's like Norm Cunningham, you know, who, you know, he's had a really bad year, but he'll be back in free zone. But, you know, he's got a, you know, he's got a dumpster depot, you know, so he cleans up and everything like that. But the other thing is that he's a plywood merchant and provider.
Yes.
And so, first of all, he gets paid for cleaning up the mess, and then he gets paid for selling people plywood, so because they've got lots of windows and roofs and everything.
All of it.
And he came, I remember it was last, I think it was October of 19, and he came for his free zone, and he walked in, and he had sort of a smile on his face, and I said,
"Oh, the hurricane."
And I said, "This is sort of guilty season for you, isn't it, Norm?" He says, "Yeah, I got to admit, I do love a really good hurricane every now
I do love a good hurricane." Oh, man, that's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, it's really interesting, you know. And people say, "Why are you so interested in politics?" And I said, for my own safety, actually. I said, you know,
for my own safety. Oh, that's so great.
I said, "I'm an entrepreneur. I represent entrepreneurs. My whole life is is devoted to entrepreneurism." And I said, you know, a lot of them are exposed. A lot of them are, you know, they're in a dangerous position and they're not paying attention to it. So I said, I've got to be on the lookout for things to warn them about. You know, so that's really, you know, that's why I came across and I said, "Little Naz, you're an entrepreneur, you know, you're an entrepreneur and, you know, maybe you have a game plan for this, but, I don't see where it's going because you're going to have to find another one. You're going to have to find another one in about 6 months after this one blows down."
Right. Well, it reminds me of when MC Hammer, way back in the 90s, when he was like, you know, "Can't touch this," when that was, you know, taking the world by storm, you know, in his puffy pants and his shiny suits and his dance moves and all of that, that once that died down, then his second act, he was having a hard time kind of getting that to that level again, and thought that he would then switch it up and switch to gangster rap and signed with Suge Knight and Death Row Records. And, it just never, it was a total mismatch, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the problems. You don't want to have the peak of your fame and wealth and career when you're 18 or 19 years old or 20 or 23 years old.
Right. Yeah.
And, they're not, you know, it's kind of interesting because they're not in a sustainable, you know, they're not in an industry where sustainability means anything. You know, it's my short entrance into the, you know, I had a short stay in the advertising industry. And as someone who really likes to put down, you know, foundation stones and build on foundation stones,
yes.
It just struck me that there was an industry where you really couldn't do that. You know, this was not an occupation
yeah.
industry where you can build. It favors luck.
Mm-hmm. It really does. That's the thing, isn't it? It's really the, although, you know, it's an interesting thing happening right now in Nashville. There's a group in Nashville who are making waves on TikTok called the 615 House. And this is 10 up and coming young country artist aspirants that are all living together in this mansion and creating content together, collaborating. It's just a collaboration house that they're just creating fun content together. And it struck me that the interesting thing about it is that that's different enough that they're getting attention. Those 10, as being part of that collaboration, are getting more attention than any of the 10 individuals would be able to get
yeah.
among the thousands of people just like them in Nashville every day.
Mm-hmm.
Another, you know, it's another good example for collaboration. I mean, another
yeah.
Opportunity, you know, they're combining yeah. they're combining their capabilities to have a bigger reach.
Yeah, the interesting thing will be, you know,
what comes.
Well, what comes and where the money is for them. I mean,
right.
I have a client, a 30-year client, actually. He's just passed 30 years, and he runs a hedge fund here in Toronto, and he switched
right.
completely over to, he's created a music, music
yes.
fund. And what they go looking for is, if you think of the long tail,
yeah,
you know, the model of the long tail. Well, straight up line, you know, at the left hand, if you're looking at it, that the
yeah.
curve, the long curve is going to the right, then the straight up line starts the curve. Well, these are the superstars, and
yes,
you know, they're out of
Paul,
reach.
Paul Simon just sold for $400 million,
yeah.
and yeah.
yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure Paul Anka could do that, you know, like, you know, people uh-huh. who build up over the years and
yeah,
everything.
Catalog.
And but what he's found is if you go down the curve to between, if you're going to the right and it's 20% to the right, and then you draw a line up to the curve, and then you go to 40%. So there's this band between 20 and 40% on the long
uh-huh.
tail. And the characteristic of these musicians, and I'll just use a number, that if they sell 1,000 this year, 5 years from now, they'll sell 1,000.
Okay.
What they do is they develop a, they develop a loyalty community that
right.
just follows them, you know, and they're not necessarily the big thing in this community, but they're
right.
always in this community. In other words, this community will always buy their new stuff. And what they do is they approach them, you know, through their, you know, through their representatives. And they said, how would you like to pre-sell the next, you know, the next 15 years of your output? But we only want to buy about 30% of it. We don't want to buy 100% of it. We want to buy 30% of it. And then the fund is about 20 different 30% that they bought of artists like that. That's what the fund is.
Yeah. Wow.
So the first one, he they basically invested about $20 million and they sold it to a much bigger musical concern for about $80 million. Okay, so wow. About four times. And now he's going big because he's proven his record, and now he's got better talent coming in.
Yeah.
Who know the market, people who are, influencers, and they have ears for, for the whole music business. And he's probably getting in 10 times as much investment right up front, where, he had to really put his own money in to start it. And now he doesn't. And he loves it. He's probably pushing 70. And he said, I hate the stock market. I hate stocks. I hate this, but I really like the music. He says I feel an emotional satisfaction of doing this. And he said, the other thing is that it's kind of giving musicians a future. It's kind of giving them a future.
Right. Yeah. Wow. That's fascinating. And he's in Toronto?
Yeah. He's been in the program for 30 years.
Wow.
Actually, I've got three of them, and they went to graduate school together. They got their MBAs together. One of them's in Calgary. One of them's near Toronto, and he's in Toronto, but they went through graduate school together, and they all came in within about a year of each other into the program. And they've all been in for basically 30 years.
That's fascinating. I'd love to meet him, actually. It sounds like a great conversation.
Yeah.
The thought process behind everything.
Maybe one
day I'll be able to come to Canada, Dan.
Well, you put that on your bucket list.
That's right. I'm thinking 2022 is going to be the year.
Well, we're feeling that the in-person workshops are going to start later this year.
Don't tell me that.
We think that we'll probably be able to draw lots of our team back to the office by late summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Maybe Jacques will come back. That would be. I would look forward to a table 10.
Let's select sold.
I know you told me that. Yeah.
Buyer, and Jacques hasn't been open since Christmas of 19.
Right.
But it's still there. I mean, the restaurant still sits.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen there. And anyway, it's interesting.
Well, that's all we could say today.
It is. But this, we've got a new term to add to Cloudlandia mainland.
What's that?
No man's land.
No man's land. That's right. That's nobody wants to get stuck in no man's land.
Yeah, because
that's first.
This is the phenomenon that allows us to talk about Cloudlandia is really a technological phenomenon, but I have to tell you, anything that disrupts things shows up as politics.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, look at Major League Baseball. I don't know what they had in mind. They didn't have to say anything. Major League Baseball didn't have to say anything about what's going on in Georgia.
Yes.
And it's a stupid, stupid move. It's a stupid move. I mean, this is not the season to piss off half of your customer base.
Right, exactly. Yeah, baseball, that's another conversation, because baseball's really made some kind of silly moves over the last, decade or so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, they fool around with the baseball. Just have one baseball. Don't make it hotter or colder or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, they And so it's a game that rewards just over the line cheating.
Right. As long as you don't get caught.
Yeah. Yeah, not yeah. far enough along the line to get caught. Yeah. Anyway.
Right.
I'm
all right, Dan.
Eager for next week. I'm certainly
me too.
Eager for next week. All right.
I will talk to you then.
Thanks, Dean. Bye.
Bye.